From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up at Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica Radio stations and affiliates nationwide. The legacy of Black women in America is getting its due in a new book just published by two acclaimed historians, Kali Nicole Gross and Dinah Ramey Berry's A Black Women's History of the United States is a comprehensive and inclusive survey of the role that African-American women have played in American society going all the way back to the year 1600. It doesn't just focus on the well-known names, but rather the forgotten women, transgender women, radicals and reformers, poor women and incarcerated women, and everyone in between. Kali Nicole Gross now joins me. She is the Martin Luther King Jr. Professor of History at Rutgers University. Her books include the award-winning Colored Amazons, Crime, Violence, and Black Women in the City of Brotherly Love. And her new book, again, is just co-authored with Dinah Ramey Berry, A Black Women's History of the United States. Welcome, Kali.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
So I want to pick up on a quote from your book to kick off our conversation, because I felt that it really explained to me the motivation behind it. You write, Black women occupy a complex, paradoxical relationship to America. We are at once marginalized and ostracized, yet our very being has been exploited to help create and maintain white supremacy. Can you expand on that a little bit, and also expand on why that is the basis for why there hasn't been enough Black women's history written?
Sure. So one of the things that we talk about early on are the ways that, you know, Black women's very being, literally, you know, the labor, their bodies, their wombs have been exploited and contributed to sort of the wealth and development of the nation. At the same time, Black women have been marginalized and stereotyped as being bossy, criminal, lazy, untrustworthy, unchaste, you name it. So there's this paradoxical relationship. On one hand, the country's basically sprung up off of Black women's labor and their offspring, at the same time that we are sort of diminished at every turn. And also, the nature of what it means to be Black and white has often been sort of developed against these sort of negative representations of Blackness and Black womanhood.
The sort of statistics that we read about today when it comes to things like employment or inequality or incarceration or maternal mortality, it seems as though Black women continue to occupy the lower rungs of those statistical indicators, which also, I imagine, is linked to the fact that the history of Black women's legacy remains underexplored.
I would agree. I definitely think that certainly the history is essential for understanding the challenges that we face. And so a lot of this sort of ignorance in how Black women are treated by health professionals, by educators, by a lot of these institutional systems that we have to encounter, it could probably be improved if they did know more about Black women's history, their experiences, their contributions, and the specific challenges that Black women have faced.
So who are the women that you explore in your book? I mean, when we think of famous Black historical figures, women figures, you know, women that come to mind would be Sojourner Truth or Harriet Tubman or Rosa Parks, but you have a lot of names here that I've never heard of before.
Right. So one of the challenges for this work was to really try to net together folks' understanding. So we have the big names, right, like Harriet Tubman or Rosa Parks, but we pair them with women like Aurelia Browder, who also refused to give up her seat in 1955 and served as a lead plaintiff in a Supreme Court, in a legal suit against the mayor of Montgomery and the Montgomery Board of Commissioners, denouncing segregated busing. So we talk about women like Frances Thompson, who just after Reconstruction, you know, had one testified against abuses she suffered during a race riot in Memphis in 18, 66, where she and her roommate had been sexually assaulted and raped by a group of white men. They actually go and testify that they didn't consent. But Frances Thompson is also, you know, a brilliant figure and a heroic figure, in my opinion, because she also lived her own truth. About a year after that arrest, she had become hounded by police for that testimony. They charged her with all kinds of crimes, including being a man in women's clothes. So she's actually arrested and subjected to invasive investigations. And they determined that her true sex to be male, even though she maintained that she was of double sex and chose to live as a woman. So she is one of the people we talk about.
Wow, what a story. Then I want to actually step back further into history, which is quite remarkable that your book begins in the 1600s. And I imagine that it might have been challenging to unearth some of the histories of these women. You write about Isabel de Olvera, a woman of African descent in Mexico. Tell me about this story and why it's part of the legacy of Black women in America.
You know, so this is an incredible story that Dinah and I felt was really important for opening up the history. She actually was the first woman of African descent to set foot on what is now New Mexico and El Paso, and she came as a free woman. So we think it's super important to point out that African American women's history in this country begins with them as free women who are explorers. Isabel was of African and Indian heritage, and she went to court to secure papers to prove that she was not, you know, encumbered by, right, that she was free. She was not enslaved, you know, she wasn't owned and she wasn't married. So she was a free woman who could go where she pleased. And she actually goes to court and gets those papers because she doesn't want anyone to also trouble her as she travels and goes on this expedition.
Wow. You also write about Angela's exodus out of Africa, 1619 to 1760. So the role of Black women as part of the American institution of slavery is something that we don't hear enough about, it seems. Of course, there have been histories written about how people have been had been enslaved, but specifically where women are concerned. Tell me a little bit about these histories.
Sure. So a part of the problem is a lot of time when folks talk about the experience of Black women during enslavement, they focus mostly on British ships. And so if you incorporate, you know, Spanish ships, Portuguese, if you look at the trade, you know, in its totality, it turns out that women and children were some of the majority of the enslaved folks who were transported. So one of the tactics that we really endeavored to show is all of the ways that Black women had been sort of critical to the development of the U.S. and really kind of, you know, sort of this kind of new world, if you will, but taking pains to also discuss what that really meant, the horror of the Middle Passage, the brutality of the process of being sold on the block, of being separated from families, all of that, but also too, the ways that Black women actively led resistance. So they used their mobility on slave ships. Often the women weren't chained. And as a result of being led aboard, above, you know, to get sort of fresh air, and also because they usually were victims of sexual assault by members of the crew, they were able to learn sort of the lay of the land, and they could try to use that to lead resistance to fight back.
Does it seem that the histories that have often been told have cast Black women as victims or at best survivors, but not necessarily as much leaders in resistance movements? Setting aside, you know, the famous figures, as I mentioned, the Harriet Tubmans and the Sojourner Truths and the Rosa Parkses, but those have seemed to be the exception because their stories have received their due. But tell me about the focus that you put on women whose names we've never heard of, that spoke out, especially in those early centuries during slavery, spoke out against slavery, spoke out for their freedom.
Right. I mean, and this is what is sort of the challenge of the work. I mean, my colleague Dinah makes a really great point in that in some respects, these women show up as flashes in the record. We have evidence of their existence from rosters, from testimony, when it's recorded, but a lot of times it's frustratingly incomplete. So we have examples of women who, you know, circumstances permitted, they use their voice to contest their captivity, to try to, you know, use the courts and petition for their freedom, to take flight, to fight back. But, you know, we've had to mine, you know, sort of sources to really uncover more of a diversity of voices and experiences as a way to sort of not only focus on the ones that we know.
So these, the history of what then happened on U.S. soil is so critically important, because often today when you hear white supremacists try to dismiss the impact of history, especially on people of color, especially on African American and especially on Black women, that history is often dismissed. What are some of the names of women that you wish would become household names, especially those women who before and during and after the Civil War continued to fight for not just Black women's freedom, but the freedom of all African Americans?
So I definitely would love for Isabel de Oliveira's name to become sort of a household name. I would also love for women like Mary Bowser to become a household name. Mary Bowser was a Black woman who worked as a servant in Jefferson Davis's house and worked as a spy for the Union Army during the Civil War. I would want Frances Thompson to become a household name, because I want to sketch out sort of the arc of Black queer and gender non-conforming folks. I would want Edmonia Lewis, who was a sculptor in the antebellum period, to also be a part of sort of the everyday parlance. And then, I mean, of course, going forward, women like Aurelia Browder, who served as lead plaintiff, you name it. I mean, I could just go on and on.
Where you want to stop me. The story of Black women being exploited, especially sexually exploited, is one that does get attention. And it is a part of seemingly one of the ugliest parts of our history that, we can't sweep under the rug, we can't set aside. And I'm wondering, what is the lens through which you view the story of Black women's sexual exploitation, especially by white men, especially by enslavers, and after that, during desegregation?
You know, we try to balance putting those stories out there so that people understand the history and the complexities of it. So we talk about issues like infanticide, which, for folks who don't know, is when mothers kill their own offspring. And we talk about that during enslavement to demonstrate ways that women sacrificed, presumably in most instances for the greater good, believing that they would spare their children some of these horrors. But also, we don't dismiss the possibility that many of these children were products of rape and serial abuse. And it's not unlikely that some women didn't feel an affinity or kinship for these offspring. So we try to talk about it in a way that's realistic, but that also allows for human frailty and for their trauma. We talk about some of the hypocrisy around sexual assault, where you have the spate of lynching against African-American men under this sort of contrived mythology about Black men as rapists, when a lot of times you have instances where Black women were also lynched, and in a number of those cases, because they were defending themselves against white male rapists.
Wow. The part of your book that focuses on the cultural work of Black women is also quite remarkable. You write, "Free Black Women," and this is after, of course, the war. You said free Black women were also artists, poets, sculptors, dancers, dressmakers, and preachers. And you referred in passing to a couple of them, but let's focus a little bit on the artists, on the Black women artists. Tell me a little bit about your favorite Black women artists in history whose names ought to be known.
This is a great, you know what? You are tough, Sonali. Okay, you have given me a run. I gotta like thumb through the book for a minute to think about who do I want to highlight right now. You know, I think, well, I talked about Edmonia already as an early sculptress. The other sculptor who I want to highlight is Augusta Savage. Augusta Savage is one of the sort of unsung heroes, really, of the arts world during the Harlem Renaissance. You know, she migrates from the South. She gets to New York City, you know, with her mother, with her daughter, who she actually refers to as her daughter. She kind of remakes herself. And she joins this vibrant scene. She creates beautiful, beautiful sculptures of everyday Black life in Harlem. She also makes things like the harp, but she also organizes and helps to found like the Free Art School in New York. She presses and works with other folks to form the Harlem Artists Guild. I mean, she's just a phenomenal figure who does incredible work.
And it seems like today, especially when we have an art scene that although we've had progress, the art scene still remains so dominated by white artists. Women's work, and particular women of color and Black women, are often, you know, still struggling so much to be seen, to get the funding they deserve. How important is it for, given that, you know, say, for example, in the art scene, there's still not enough emphasis, or it's harder for women of color in particular and Black women in particular to break into the scene. How important is it for young Black women to have access to this kind of history that you and your co-author have written? Because it's so important to see the people that have gone before us on whose work we can build.
Thanks. So this is a great question. I think it's critical. I mean, one of the things that we are super excited about is that they're also going to develop a young adult version of the book. And I personally selected, I know Dinah did as well, like we've spent a lot of time talking and selecting figures who could talk, that could sort of represent a cross-section of Black women's history, but who also could help to inspire folks. So we wrote this book thinking about 21st century readers and those needs. I think having a sense of the history of Black women in every conceivable field, in every kind of vein, is crucial so that they understand that they are a part of a legacy.
We heard recently of the death of Katherine Johnson at age 101, the NASA mathematician who was one of the three women immortalized in the film Hidden Figures. So it's not just art, there's science as well. And you as an academic, as a historian, you start your book explaining how you and your co-author yourselves have had to face opposition and barriers that white men say in your field don't face. This, I feel, is again important when we are talking about the framework for why a history book like this needs to be written, right?
Thank you. No, I couldn't agree more. I mean, we definitely confronted these challenges about whether or not Black women's history could be done, you know, about whether or not we had the capacity to become historians. I mean, the biases in the academy are real. And we were fortunate enough to have had a strong sort of cadre of foremothers, if you will, who had already begun writing this history and documenting all of the things that Black women had done. That served certainly as inspiration for both of us, in the same way that we hope that this book will inspire all of the readers who will encounter it. And also, you know, young Black women and our allies.
You have near the later part of your book, as we get to the modern era, the story of the Black woman who really pulled down climbed up. What was it? She planted a flag, Trump Care Makes Us Sick, and she had climbed up the base of the Statue of Liberty on Liberty Island, Therese Patricia Okumu. Tell me about why she makes it into your history book.
You know, she was crucial. She really helped to stretch out the arc of Black women's history. She is, you know, a woman from the continent who had come to the U.S., right, become a citizen, and still, you know, when confronting, you know, injustice, not for herself, right, but for children who are imprisoned at the border, many of whom are from South and Central America, taking this heroic stand against that injustice, right, to scale the Statue of Liberty, no less, right, to demand justice for these folks. That, for me, is a crucial part of the legacy of Black women's history, that Black women have never ceded or really been supplicants to white supremacy and racist double standards, that even as captives, Black women have continued to fight and put a demand out there on the powers that be for justice. And so for us, Patricia's climb was indicative of that legacy and a crucial way to stop, because it also helped to demonstrate this other piece that I hope folks take away, which is that in all of Black women's activism, there's no push, that there's nothing they accomplish that they say it's only to help other Black women, right? It's always in a way that helps uplift everyone.
And I want to finally ask you to touch on what we started out discussing, which is, but I didn't quite articulate it as such, which is the definition itself of who a Black woman is, or who you consider a Black woman in your history. The woman that we just talked about was not someone that was born in the United States. She came from, I believe she's Nigerian. There's also women that are, so it's not just the sort of straight cisgender Black women or African-American women. You have an expansive definition of who you consider a Black woman. Why?
Right. No, I just want to say, so Patrice is from the Congo. She was
the Congo, Congolese. I'm sorry.
Uh-huh. No, that's fine. So we, you know what? We definitely considered it with a diasporic lens. But the reality is that that is the nature of Black women's history. You have women who have emigrated to the United States, right? Whether by, you know, voluntarily or by, you know, vis-a-vis captivity. You have an influx of Caribbean immigrants and folks from South America throughout the history, as well as from the continent. All of these Black folks have contributed to African-American history and have been themselves influenced by the African-American history by folks who are native born generations after enslavement. So we try to take it together to weave a story that tells the complexity of that history and those experiences.
Well, Kali, I want to thank you so much for joining us today, spending this time with us. Good luck with the book.
Thank you so much for having me and for this great opportunity.
My guest has been Kali Nicole Gross, Martin Luther King Jr. Professor of History at Rutgers University. Her books include the award-winning Colored Amazons, Crime, Violence, and Black Women in the City of Brotherly Love. And we've been discussing the latest book that she's co-authored with Dinah Ramey Berry, called A Black Woman's History of the United States. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also, follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RU with Sonali.